Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. My name is Smiley and I'm joined by Van Gilder today in our studio. Unfortunately, no Crack today, no Corey today, but the two of us coming back to hold it down for you guys. It's been a long weekend of football action. Or actually, you know, for some of us, we might say not too many interesting things have happened. I think in the EPL, I don't know, nothing really interesting happened. I hear say some team on Merseyside win some title like that. I don't really know much about it. I've not seen anything. I've not read anything. I've not really heard anything. But according to some sources, they say Liverpool have won their 20th EPL title. As I speak right now, there's a lot of pain in my heart. First of all, honestly, I'll be sore loser, so I'm not coming to do the whole congratulations to Liverpool and all of those things. But all I can say is Arne Slot for one has equaled the likes of Mourinho, Ancelotti, Pellegrini, and Antonio Conte in winning a Premier League title in their first season, which is an impressive achievement. But before I go into any of this, Van Gilder, what are your thoughts on Liverpool's title win? Because they seem to have wrapped it up very easily without much of a challenge. In previous seasons, at least, we've seen a healthy title race. This one has been dead for like, say, a month, 2 months now.
I want to start by saying congratulations to Liverpool and Fred. Freddy in particular. Daddy Fred, congrats to you and your team. I'm not a sole loser. I can admit when someone has made that. See, the Premier League or any league, winning any league title in general shows the strength, character, and abilities of your coach and your team. Whether you vex or you know vex, I know the biz. So if somebody, if you go through a whole season and win the league, they deserve to be applauded. I don't know what you were expecting. It was Arsenal that was chasing them. I don't know what they mean by we had expected them good. It be Arsenal. I don't know what they expect for there.
I mean, but to be fair, nobody expected Man City to be this bad. So that's when I say I didn't expect it to be this easy. At the very least, like once the last time Liverpool, the last time Liverpool won the title, that was also fairly easy because they had wrapped it up basically by their COVID break. Yeah. So Liverpool would be like every time then they get things handed on a silver platter to them. Like, I really understand.
You see, it's not handed. If it just happens that every time they win, it coincides with everybody else being bad. It's just, I don't know what they happen. I don't know what payments they go on. So, but all I know is,
so you want to be Mickey Mouse title?
This one in particular, the one for the COVID era, there be Asterix Day back. You know if you do bad parade and things. But this one in particular, I think they've thoroughly deserved it. Considering that one Arne Slot, no one knew what to expect. And in fact, not just because Arne Slot, nobody knew what to expect from Arne Slot, but also because Jurgen Klopp is such an iconic manager for Liverpool. And we've seen across different clubs that when such a manager leaves, it takes clubs usually 1, 2, 3, 4 for some clubs almost 12 years to move on, right? And get their act together. But for Liverpool, it seems that they've picked the right man as their replacement. And he did very well by just coming almost like not changing too much, right? And then they've just gone through the season and thankfully for them, they've won the league. So congratulations to Liverpool and the Liverpool fans out there. I think they deserve it. I think they've won the league in an impressive manner. They've been the best team in the league all season. If you take the grand totality of it, they've been the best team in the league. I don't think anybody would disagree, especially Man U fans, because you oppose still the relegation battle, but that'd be cool. Yeah. It's match week 30 something, you still no get 40 points, but that'd be cool. So yeah. I think they've deserved the league title. I think they've done well. Mo Salah has also broken the record for most goals scored by a foreigner, I think, in the league. He's now surpassed Kun Aguero. So, big ups to Mo Salah. I don't know if he will still be able to break the assist record or not. I don't know whether he catch or you know catch, but it will be good for him to be able to do that as well, just to add it to whatever. So I think they deserve it. Generally, that's my thoughts. I think they deserve to win the league. Intriguing to see what they will do next year, because then most people will get their acts together. I don't think Man United will, but most clubs will get their acts together. So we'll see where we go from there.
Again, I'm trying hard not to say anything positive because I don't feel anything positive in my heart. But what I would say is that Arne Slot has done well to take over from managers legendary as Jurgen Klopp and managed to do this in his, at the first time of asking, because we all know how these sort of transitions happen. At the beginning of the season, I admit, in fact, if you just go back to our first episode of the season, I said Liverpool were not going to finish in the top four. That prediction has gone completely off. So that should tell you how low my expectations were and how much he's been able to surpass them. So yeah, it's been a great achievement for him. Maybe some may say he's running on the club juice. Maybe, you don't know, maybe club sets the team where then still they run on autopilot. So maybe next season we will see the true Slot team. I don't know. Like, I'm just saying, you know, so that's been good to see. Salah, like, I don't like Liverpool, but me, I appreciate greatness when I see it. I'm not one of those people who does the whole pure football, this guy in football, would it be? If I measure players according to their effectiveness, it's not about who in ball they look sweet or anything. And Salah is probably the most effective attacker we've seen in the Premier League for the past, say, 10 years in terms of scoring goals, assisting, impacting the game overall. Yeah, so we all know that the PFA Player of the Year is already wrapped up for him. It's not even going to be a close competition. Me, as a professional gambler, I've been monitoring the odds for that particular award for the entire season. The closest anybody came to him was Cole Palmer as of December, which is now funny because now people are talking about Cole Palmer being terrible the whole season. And I very much remember him being number two,
bro,
in the running for PFA Player.
He still created more big chances even than Bruno Fernandes. Like, his bad season, he's 3 goals and assists away from Saka's best ever season. So for me, it looks like I won't direct to Cole Palmer, but when people tell me Cole Palmer is bad, I always remember he's a 22-year-old kid. This is his second full season as a footballer. Second. So fine, he's allowed to have these kind of dips. He'll learn from it. He'll get better. That's all me I get to. Every day, people won't do like, they know they see Cole Palmer shine, Cole Palmer this. Bro, do you know how many chances he created since December? He created so many. You know what? Let's move on. We could just talk about Liverpool.
But yeah, anyway, back to Liverpool. Like I said, Salah, he's had an amazing season. Van Dijk, as always, also another incredible season for him. Another player who I keep saying that I hate Liverpool, but Van Dijk there, because I discovered him way before he went to Liverpool, way before he even went to Southampton. So I always get some sort of, I get some small love for him in some corner of my heart. Same way people like Hazard and things, I always get some kind of love for them. So yeah, it's been a good season for them. I hope it doesn't happen again next season, because for them to equal us on 20 titles this season, and then the possibility of them surpassing us 21,
because there's no way they win the league next season.
See, next season, if it comes down to it, I'm supporting Arsenal 100%. Whether it's Arsenal coming, if anything, Pep, I don't think I can stand. The thing is, I can't stand another Liverpool title, and I also can't stand another Pep title. So
you want Mikel Arteta to win. Do you think we'll be able to exist in this life if Arsenal win the title next year?
I would like to believe that.
Think about it for a moment. We know them. When they beat Real Madrid, one of their tacticals puts a breakdown of how an extraordinary team beat serial winners and the man who brought the tactics from heaven. You think we'll be able to survive in this space if they win the league title? Champions League, I don't want them to. In fact, I don't want them to win. And they should just keep trying. They should keep trying and bottling, trying them. That's what we know them for. That's what we want them to do. That's what will make us happy. But if we make a mistake and they win even FA Cup or something, we are dead. We are dead.
Anyway, speaking of the FA Cup, that was the other major thing that happened over the weekend, where we saw Aston Villa being thrashed by Crystal Palace in the first semi-final on Saturday. And then we saw Man City doing a professional job against Nottingham Forest on Sunday. We start with Aston Villa versus Crystal Palace, because that was the one that came as a shock to me. I honestly thought Aston Villa were going through, because first of all, we all know Emery to be a cup manager. That's where he does his best work. So it was something that I thought was wrapped up. And again, as a gambler, me, I had money on Aston Villa to win the FA Cup, because looking at how Man City have been wobbling in the big games and everything, I felt like if Aston Villa could make it to the final and go and face Man City, they would be able to do something. So this result came as a complete shock to me, especially the manner of the defeat. And Van Gerwen, again, let me just pick your thoughts on this one. Is it something that came as a shock to you? What were your general feelings about this one?
I didn't come as a shock to me. Personally, I don't know. I just think every time the pressure is high, if you know be Chelsea, Villa, they play them, always they capitulate. Personally, I'm not surprised. They only show up when they play Chelsea. Anybody else, then go midweek, the pressure was high. They had to play Man City. They lost. Did they not? This weekend to Crystal Palace. But I want to give Crystal Palace their flowers, because they are one of those teams that people don't take notice, because they are not like high up the table and whatnot. They've not had a good season generally, like in the full context. At the beginning of the season, they were pretty poor. But they have a very good manager, and they have players that can execute the tactics and the strategies that the manager puts them out to play. Personally, like this, if you left me, say, make a goal sign, somebody give Chelsea, like Mateta, like this, a secondary striker, 100%. I'm entering Crystal Palace. Eh? I'm just going there, getting off at East Croydon Station, walking to Crystal Palace. I just enter there, go pay money, go take them, go take the guy, go west. Easy. Easy, cry. Easy. They have Izzy, they have Ismail Assar, he's a bit, they have Walton in midfield. Like, they are they've got very, very good or good to very good players in several positions. They are, their fullbacks are quite good. Mitchell and the other, I forgot the other guy's name. Fullbacks are quite good. Their center back pairing is, it's okay. And don't forget, they lost their best center back at the beginning of the season. I think he went, where did he go? I forgot. But he go one of the other EPL clubs like that. I forget his name. He went to Fulham. I think he went to Fulham, if I'm not mistaken. But they did lose one of their centre-back pairings from last season. Right? And that everybody was like, hey, this is problematic. And they were on course to lose Gay to until they couldn't find an agreement with Newcastle. So, if you think about all those things, they've come out of the season underwhelming in terms of performance in the Premier League. But in the FA Cup, everybody, the miracle of the FA Cup, everybody feels, you know, if I'm here, this could be a trophy I could win. And Glasner is a good enough manager to win. Personally, I'm happy they won, because, and I'm happy City won too, because I can't stand that if we don't make top five, when we top six, then somebody could go win FA Cup again. And you know, he won't forgo them. Me, I forgot Europa Conference. I go win. So, personally, I'm just happy City won, because at least City there, then go fish show them something for the final there. At least win one trophy to, you know, make their season not too bad, you know. And so I think they deserved it. They played really well. They were the best team on the day. I'm not surprised that Villa lost. And I'm hearing this thing about them and Marcus Rashford. Hey, if you don't find the money and go and pay and keep the guy, you'll not be serious. Anyway, yeah. So I think Crystal Palace deserves to win. I think it's standard Villa behavior under pressure to capitulate. And yeah, it's unfortunate for them, but yeah, I'm glad they lost.
Speaking of Rashford, you know, it's actually interesting to me to see how important he's become to Villa now, because when the lineups came out on Saturday and his name wasn't in it, there were plenty of Villa fans in the replies just crying, lamenting that, no Rashford, we are doomed. And I was thinking, these people are overreacting. Like, last season you had Watkins doing all the attacking job for you. Like, why is it such a big deal that you're missing Rashford? But somehow, I just feel like if they had Rashford in the lineup, even though like his output in the final third can be inconsistent, he still brings that chaos factor. And that chaos factor alone can result in your team even being a little more reserved in the way they attack, a little more conscious about committing bodies forward, that kind of thing. So it's one thing that I think they were missing big time in the semi-final, that Rashford wasn't playing. But again, for me, it was a terrible tactical display by Emery, because they should have put up a better fight.
Sorry to catch you, but Martinez has been on this horrible form for a while now. Martinez has been poor for a while.
Martinez, right? he gets a lot of World Cup tax hanging around his neck. Like I don't know whether it's World Cup tax or I don't know, grace or something, because
it'll be Argentina aura.
He gets a lot of extended periods where he can be messing up, and then you have maybe a month, 2 months where he does well. Like I don't know, but there's always this thing about him. So yeah, Martinez, there's always an asterisk around him for me. But yeah, again, Crystal Palace, they really did well. You mentioned Mateta. Again, this Mateta thing, it makes me want to divert into a different conversation about modern strikers and everything, and modern teams. And
if you go there, we will talk about all these Bami sporting directors. That'd be the problem.
I don't mind talking about it, because it's like I'm glad you brought it up, because let's say how long ago was it that Chelsea had Demba Ba as a backup striker? I feel like that's a kind of the caliber of backup striker we used to have.
Yeah, or even look, there was a time Chelsea had Drogba and Anelka. Anelka left or something like that. We go by Torres. Like, that's what big teams used to do. At the very least, you have two top strikers and they are competing week in, week out. Maybe one of them will be starting 11 caliber. But you always had an equally competent backup. But right now, if we take away even Man City, last season they had Haaland and Alvarez. No, then go sell them. Nobody tell them, see, make them pick mine right now, then go sign Mamouche, see the things they do give them. But if you take teams, all the other big teams, apart from Liverpool too, cry, they don't have. So apart from Man City, Chelsea, only we had Nicolas Jackson, where we go buy some Kidibi, Puyos, or whatever his name be. He hurts. So he's out. So right now, effectively, we have one striker. Arsenal, cry, they're Bobo, they don't have. Look, Man United, Hoyland, then Zexy.
Striker will say he no like strike.
He already talks, he cried, they know they like strike. Look at Liverpool, they have Nunes and what be his name, Jota. Both of them, Nunes is no good, and Jota can't stay fit to save his life. So basically,
and Jota is not actually he's a winger.
Yeah. But because his legs are gone, everybody they make him play strike. But Tottenham is not a big team. But if you look at all the big teams, the only club where they're not a big team, but then they try to do something safe, Newcastle, where then get Isak. And then I think outside of Isak, they have Murphy, who can play either.
They have Callum Wilson.
Callum Wilson, thank you. So the smaller teams, rather they get better strikers. Look at what be your name? If you go Fulham has. Muniz,
the Mexican,
that Muniz guy. Then get this guy come from Wolves. So then get Rodrigo Muniz. They get Carlos Vinicius. Where then get Raul Jimenez. Then get three strikers. If you go Crystal Palace, then get Jean-Philippe Mateta. Where then get somebody may touch Edin Ketia, no good. But he still be striker. He's a but their level, if you go Wolves have what be named the guy
Strand Larsen.
Strand Larsen, where then also get the Korean.
The South Korean.
Wan Hee Chan.
You go to Brighton, they have João Pedro, Welbeck.
So basically, the smaller teams like that have striking options and things. The big teams, boom, then go hire these bang bamis sporting directors, then them are woke coaches, them all pick my. Like, what's the meaning of this? Like, all the news. All the big clubs in England don't want to sign Osimhen because it's either people don't want to pay his salary or they have a problem with his attitude. Bro, do you want goals or not? Any striker worth his salt in the men's game has an attitude. It'd be normal. It'd be say if you make it, they feel good, you make it, they play in ball, they score goals, he go give you everything. I'm not a big fan of Osimhen. But right now, if you tell me, say, Chelsea, with the goal sign strikers, I say, bring him. Because the balls Pedro Neto then things, they cross into the box. Head that. Go ball. Do you know the last time I saw a Chelsea striker head the ball? We don't even see head that goals anymore from strikers. That then cross, then the striker, cool, go ball. Or go from outside the box. Yesterday was the first goal that Jackson has called from outside the box. Can you imagine? Striker. So, all of these things are... It's ridiculous squad planning. You spend... of course, right now, players are more expensive. And if Chelsea won't buy somebody from Crystal Palace, we go pay tax. But pay 45 million, bring Philippe Mateta, pay 70 million, bring... what did they call him? Osimhen. You have Osimhen, Mateta and Jackson, he know how to cry, and then the trainer, then he be left winger. We said, if we don't get left winger, when I left winger, somebody said, I poison him right now, then they say, he go take back. I know say be my fans and do that. So Arsenal, somebody do them, then Jadar.
If you go poison somebody, be Mudrik.
If it's Arsenal fans, they don't really like him. He snub them, make you pain them. But, Jackson can play on the left. Charlie, if you think about it, it's so blatantly clear what every team needs. And yes, there are not a lot of good number nine, but if there are some there, you should be po-po-po-po. You can't tell me that we won't left make Arsenal dog walk go sign Gyokeres. United should be in there. Chelsea should be in there. Spurs should be in there. Liverpool should be in there. Everybody won't do we don't want to spend, let's be fine. We'll be fine with our 9 3/4 striker where he discusses streaky goals once every 15 years. Masa.
You know, and in all of this, this thing has really triggered me because it brings us to the topic of how right now, going into the summer, the most in-demand striker out there is probably Liam Delap of Ipswich, who has scored 12 league goals. Yes, he's done what to score 12 league goals for a relegation club as 22 years old. But that tells you the switch in how the big teams think. Because if you want somebody to solve your scoring problems, yes, the lap might do the job, but there's a bigger chance that he will not do the job. And let me use the example of Man United. Where the lap is right now is probably in the same position Hoyland was in a few years ago, or the same position that Evan Ferguson was in a few years ago. 2 years ago, Evan Ferguson was arguably the most in-demand striker in the Premier League. They were quoting 100 million for him and things. Look at where he is now. And that's the thing about going for these younger players, these younger strikers. There's no guarantee that their trajectory will continue the way you're expecting it to go. And there's always this, like you're saying, with these modern sporting directors and all these people, it's like they'll see a striker like Osimhen. He's scoring 30 goals a season, 25 goals a season. And then instead of just going straight to source, then go sit back and think, instead of going for this guy, why can't we just go for somebody who might be able to reach this level? because we don't want to pay the premium that comes with getting a ready-made striker. We won't go this thing, raw materials factories. I go find used raw materials and build on our own team. But that's not how football works. You're as a big team in the first place. I don't have any problem against teams wanting to get younger talents because obviously right now, like I said, it's very expensive getting ready-made strikers. But at the same time, like, you don't just buy a young striker and throw them into the starting lineup and expect them to flourish. What is happening to Haaland? Yes, Haaland, like, right now, my opinion of him is changing drastically. But at the same time, I don't think there are many strikers who would have thrived under those conditions. When Man City signed Julian Alvarez, he had Haaland ahead of him. There was no pressure on him to score goals because Haaland had all the pressure on him. And Haaland had already proven himself as different clubs. He had proven himself in the Champions League. He had proven himself in Bundesliga. Like, there was no doubt that Haaland was going to do what he's doing now. But if you had put Julian Alvarez in the Man City team as the main striker from day one, what do you think would have happened? I don't think he would have turned out the way he turned out.
But you see,
probably have been back on loan at Raplit or something like that by now.
And look, Chelsea is the best example for this. Even though it's not just because they're my club, but look at how many young players we've bought in positions where we don't have proper experience. So in the period where we are undergoing a rough patch, it's rough, sir. Nobody. And our coach too is young. He too, they learn on the job. We go sign national service coach. We go sign national service players. I don't know what we were expecting. It don't be national service results you go get. Yes, they are good. They are talented. And they have the potential to be world class and world beaters and whatever. Nobody is saying don't sign them. All we are saying is, if you want to sign young player, the least you can do to help that young player is to have an experienced guy that can help them. If, like, for instance, we brought in Levi Colwell, and when Colwell came in, he was playing alongside Thiago Silva. There are certain things Thiago Silva go fit show him. Oh, you know, every time you for rush, you for calm down, you for do this, you for do that, you for do. So that experience of playing with Thiago Silva for a year or two is invaluable. By the time Thiago Silva they left, at least Colwell know certain things. If you are playing him alongside somebody else who is also quite experienced and whatnot, all of that helps. But you won't, why not? They say they don't size some guy and go, the Bournemouth defender hoist because they don't want to miss out. Fine, go sign him. You go sign him. But you are playing, you have Hoisin, you have Colwell, you have Chaloba, you have Badiashil, you have De Sassi, you have a Champo. That'd be six center backs. What you get? Six. Why? And all of them, the oldest person be the sassy, way too shy. So where did they go from here?
And I'm like, very sure among all these people you've mentioned, I don't think they have more than 10 Champions League appearances.
No.
Between them.
No. Maybe the sassy and he has up to 10, but they're sure. I can't remember them playing for Monaco in Champions League. So I don't know. Maybe them, at best. But look at that. Look at what you're doing. If you can't make food, you get...
And none of them are starters for their national team, too.
Make you not even remind me of that. Make you not remind me of that. So, like, you don't have players at the back that can help you. Sanchez, Wasan, you know good. If you can't make food, okay, that'd be where we'd be cool small. So, you have Lavia, Enzo, and Caicedo, good. Good three, but we have also Andre Santos coming back from Strasbourg, and then you get Leslie Gochuku coming back from Southampton. But one of these two I mentioned, then go sell one this summer because space no day. Then if you go wings, Madueke, that be what this week. Then the coach they talk to every time they debate them. So do you think Chelsea make champion? Hey boy, you said massa. Just 10 years ago, if Chelsea bring Drogba off, they are bringing. What did they call him? Remy, like Remy, or then they bring them Baba, or then they bring somebody like that on. Right, if they bring what would they name Diego Silva, Diego Costa off. Then they bring Michy Batshuayi. Right now, we no get. Right now, if I take what did he said? Right now, if I take Jackson off, and they bring 2006 year born Tyreek George, that be the option I get. Or make a if I want West Crash Shimweka, himself will be younger past Tyreek George. He's like 17 or something. How can you expect the team to progress? So for us, based on our circumstances, then staying in the Champions League all season means that we've done well. For Chelsea, where Chelsea fans ball, how can you have such an Arsenal-like mentality, say you, if you did Champions League position? But look at the tools he has to work with. If you look at the tools he has to work with and their experience and the collective balance of the team, you can understand why for him, if you've never been in Champions League position for 2 years, and in 1 year, in this season, you've been in Champions League position almost all season. For them, that's progress. Of course, for them, that'll be progress. For us, we've seen our teams win. But you saw them win that we had Deco, Lampard, Mike Lissian, Balak at a point in our club. John Obi Mikel, in addition. Five. Look at these midfielders I mentioned. Five who they were competing for places. They were competing. We had Maluda, you had Damien Duff, you had the Entins on your wings. You had Willian and Hazard and Pedro. Right now we get Madueke then Neto. But they say make we not all. What kind of squad planning is this?
And you know, and the bottom line for me in all of this is that these teams need to stop being overly fixated on the future and think about the present. You can, and that's the thing about clubs these days. It's like they don't realize that you can build your present and your future at the same time. I'm always using Real Madrid as an example. At every point in time, you can see like a succession plan for Real Madrid. They had, at the time when they signed Hazard, in fact, when Ronaldo left, they signed Hazard. When they signed Hazard, they also signed Vinicius and Rodrigo as their succession plan for Ronaldo and Bale. Hazard, it didn't turn out well. Bale too decided to check out of football very early. So the progress of Vinicius and Rodrigo had to be fast-tracked. But you could see the succession plan that they had. Their plan wasn't to jump straight from Ronaldo to Vinicius and Rodrigo. The plan was to jump from Ronaldo, from the Ronaldo era to the Bale era, supported by Vinny and Rodrigo. And then, like, everything was just messed up by what Hazard and Bale came to do, everything. But, like, that's how teams plan their succession. If it was Man United, Endrick would have been a starter at United from day one. But see how they are even starving him of game time for the fans to even get pissed. Same thing with Arda Güler. Camavinga, till now, he's not been an assured starter for Madrid. He starts like quite a number of games, but he's never been a guaranteed starter for them. And that's really how you build a team. Like, at every point in time, you can have a senior player and a younger player who is understudying him, and they are both fighting for the same position. It doesn't mean that the senior player, his position is guaranteed, and the younger, but like, that's the kind of competition you build. Not two teenagers fighting for the same position. Right now, assuming you don't sell Hoyland, for example, for Man United, or even Nico Jackson for Chelsea.
Bro, you know we'll sell them. Who they can buy is Hoyland.
Because both of our teams are in the same like situation in terms of the fact that you have Nicolas Jackson, who is what, 22, 23. You are probably going to be in the race for...
That's what they claim.
You are probably going to be in the running for the lap. Man United also have Zexy and Hoyland, who are around the same age. They come to sign the lap, who is also within the same age range. Like, how do you expect things to work out? Because right now, if the lap doesn't start well, you are going to find a situation where you have three strikers in the same boat, in the same category. Like, how does that work? You don't have anybody who is guaranteed to score goals. Like, for me, this Osimhen thing, if not him, then Gyökeres, like, for me, is a no-brainer that you should be looking at somebody who has a proven record. 12 goals, like, yeah. Talking about, like, the Lab has scored 12 goals, and it takes me back to someone like Andy Carroll. When was it? 2011, when Liverpool signed Andy Carroll. Andy Carroll had scored 11 league goals as of January. At the time, everybody thought, oh, this guy, the sure banker, 21-year-old striker, very big, very strong. He scored goals in the Premier League. He's proven himself. That thing, that term they like to use, Premier League proven. How many times has that thing actually worked out that people use it as like a guarantee of some form of success? Everything pointed to the fact that Andy Carroll is going to perform in the Premier League. And we saw how that happened. And that's how I see when people talk about players like Delap and Co. But these people, they've hired their experts. Their experts are crunching numbers for them, and that's all they want to look at. So we don't have any say in it. But back to the matter of the FA Cup, because we digressed a lot. In the other semi-final, Man City did a professional job against Nottingham Forest. One of those matches where you thought, oh, Nottingham Forest is their first time in the semi-final for a long time. Maybe they are going to ride on the fans' passion, try to put in a tough performance, something. Second minute, no, Man City just put all their hope in the sand, because from there, it didn't really look like the game was going to go in any other direction. So, Van Gelder, like Man City, we've seen them in this position a lot of times. I think this is going to be their third FA Cup final in a row. What are you expecting to happen? And I don't think anybody was truly surprised.
See, me, I need all my ops in this top five race to be just bad. I just need all of them to be bad. So that'd be why Villa in loss, they beat me. Nottingham Forest too, they beat me. Make them all just can't get bad form at the end of the season. Make everybody just lose. Me like this. Hey, see, I have an offer for Liverpool fans. It'll be simple. Next week, if you come Stamford, I think we are playing Liverpool next week. If you come Stamford Bridge, guard of honor, yeah, he did already. We go free talk to Caicedo, then Lavia, me, then can't talk, sorry. Just make we hold that 3 points. Simple. Everton can't give we free 3 points. You to give we free 3 points. Make we just hold and make we just go. I think it's a good offer. Think about it and get back to us. But my point is, City have changed or have been playing better since the turn of the year. It's been gradual, but they've been playing better. Right? Their movements, their how high up the pitch they play, their pressing, all of those things has improved since January. Where them then get shame. Then my manager, he they thought small. So definitely, he will want at least one trophy to take along for the season. To show at least I won FA Cup. So me, I knew that it was easy peasy. They will just win and they will just move on. I was very happy to see that they won. Because that'd be what he need with. Make them just win, make we just move on. At the end of the day, Nottingham Forest, they're not going to take the Europe to do anything. Look, I love them because them be my homeboys. But still, the Europe, they go can't tell like Newcastle, them my first season, as they go Europe, them shine for their way, then sound so shine for domestic. Then we'll chop like 17 for 18 for something. So if they know what be good for them, maybe they no go Europe, maybe they just chop 8 or 6 or something. Take hold Europa. Take at least then go try that one before you go Champions League. So me, I think Man City will win the FA Cup. I think it's, for me, I do understand that Crystal Palace always causes Man City a problem. And for them, this is their third final in their history. So it's a big occasion and they may want to prove something. But it no go shock me, say the final, same thing. 2 minutes, Haaland or Mahmoud or somebody, back, go, end all hoops. Then we go, manager, man, Palace go. Make some mistakes, then bah, second goal. Then by 56 minutes, then win the game. We move forward. Everybody be happy. By that time, then I qualify for Champions League too. So.
Yeah, like I'm really trying to find some hope in Crystal Palace winning the final, but I just don't see it. Man City, the thing about them is that when they have to do a job against a team much lower than them, they always do it. They are not the type of team that slips up in these type of games, especially under Pep. So it's very hard to see it. But I mean, when was the last time they lost? And if I remember, when was it? 2013. They lost the FA Cup final against Wigan. So I'm hoping Crystal Palace can channel that same energy and go and do something for us. Yeah. Moving on to cup competitions in other countries. On Saturday night, we saw Barcelona winning the Copa del Rey against Real Madrid in dramatic fashion. 3-2, going into extra time. First of all, Real Madrid this season in the big games, particularly against Barca, they've been spanked left and right. It's not been nice to watch. Like, this one was quite close, but in the end, still out at the same outcome. I don't know what is going on with them, or whether Flick just knows how to battle. Like, I just don't know what it is. But what were your thoughts on that game?
I said it last week. Real Madrid have not been good this year. Like, bro, them played 3 matches against Barcelona this year. The aggregate score be 12-4. So I don't know what again anybody was expecting. Yeah, this time they didn't do all this or remontada, omonda, Juan, whatever thing then they do for the Champions League. But they still had a lot of, oh, we know, maybe we no go play, maybe this. But, bro, just like, what's going on? What's going on? Carlo to himself, he did serious negotiation. They say he will join a Brazil FA by before the end of the season. He will join now. But because he be like, I mean, them already announced after this match, he left Real Madrid.
Yeah.
So it's likely he will join Brazil. He will go now, then maybe Real Madrid will go take Klopp or somebody like that. That's what I've heard. But at the end of the day, me, I thought Madrid would lose. Like, you know, they shock me. Say Madrid lose. You know, they shock me. Barcelona are very good. They are very good this season. Like, some way, somehow, them are a high line where everybody figure if we catch them, it'll be simple, quick ball over the top. Their defenders are fast, they are strong, and they understand how to play it. Where if he makes one mistake, offside. So I'm personally not surprised. I did think Real Madrid would lose. I even slept halfway through. Woke up, Real Madrid had lost. I said, see a kind. So me, from my perspective, I think Real Madrid was supposed to lose because they are not good. And if you are not good, you shouldn't be winning trophies to use it to paper over the cracks. You should know, your fans should know you are not good. That they will give you pressure so you will do the right thing in the summer. So
let me try and instigate something small. So even though Mbappe didn't start the game because he's been carrying an ankle injury for a few weeks now, how much of an impact do you think Mbappe's signing has had on Real Madrid this season, particularly in the negative sense? Because it seems already last season they had two players who prefer to play on the left, but they still managed to work their way around it. But this season now you have three players who prefer to play on the left. One is still playing on the right, but Mbappe, you've shoehorned him in the middle, and it's been on record that Mbappe doesn't really like to play through the middle. And a lot of times you see him drifting to the left, which is the space where Vinicius occupies.
Or the left half space, which is where Jude likes Bellingham to operate as well. So look, at the end of the day, the negative effect is that it's poor squad planning. They've done that thing that they did many, many years ago when they were just signing Galacticos for the fun of it. Because at the end of the day, what was Madrid's biggest problem last summer? They needed a striker. Even before Juan, they needed a striker. They tried to go for Kane. They couldn't agree a deal with, what be his name, Levy. So they let Kane go to Bayern. And that's it. They need a striker. An actual proper number 9. Nicolas Jackson, they made a campaign money with him. But yeah, they need a striker. And if you need a striker, you go out, you sign a striker. You don't sign somebody that's a winger that can potentially play strike. But I think additionally, like in addition to that, they've not been helped. Like, the players then get a lot of them, they've got less of a team now and more of, like, I think they've got more of egos now. They are turning into that PSG by animal way them get. The reason why PSG is doing well now is because they function better now in terms of playing as a team.
But the common denominator in these two situations is Mbappe, so does it not come back to him?
Yes, it does, but then there's also Vini, who thinks he should have won the Ballon d'Or and he was robbed.
Yeah, but in the end, they won the Champions League without him. So, like, the dynamics were fine until Mbappe came.
I'm not disputing that. All I'm saying is that by adding Mbappe, That's the point I'm making. By adding in Mbappe, you've moved from frying pan to fire. You were already in a frying pan with Vini and some of these other guys. By adding in Mbappe, you've removed the frying pan and you've dropped all your stuff in the fire itself. Right? And now you have too many egos playing who think they are good. Meanwhile, they are mid and they are not playing together as a team. And you have a manager who doesn't necessarily prepare. Like, Carlo Ancelotti's tactics is, I have a bunch of good young players or good players. I will set them up in a way where everybody can just do whatever they want to do up top. You are not playing as in, this is how we move. You, when this ball goes here, you go here, this moves here. They are not playing like that.
And I mean, and that's how he's always been, and it's been working. Because, like, the thing about Ancelotti is that I think he appreciates the fact that when you're handling big names and big egos, you don't necessarily have to overcoach them, because good players figure things out all the time. So you don't necessarily have to tell them, you stand here, you stand here, you stand here. You just put them in a situation where they can all express their individual quality in a way that comes together to help the team. So,
however, if you have players like you do now who like to drift into the left half space and then begin to take up the zones of other people, then as a coach, you must now insist on having people stay in certain zones only and not drift into the AE, because now them figuring it out means that it is to the detriment of the whole team, of the team as a whole. Them just, you know, because figuring it out might mean Mbappe needs to drop deep to pick the ball from the center circle and drive at the opponent. But him dropping deep means that there's no anchor or there's no reference point in front. Vini might not move in because he doesn't like coming into the middle. Neither will Rodrigo do it. So at the end of the day, it'd be different if you say, you know what, Mbappe, I'm not saying you like the move around, but if Mbappe drop, Bellingham, I want you to fill that gap. If Mbappe move, go left, Bellingham, go around him, or Vini, you go up top, or what be his name, Rodrigo, Inspector Rajesh, come middle, make we just move around. Like, there is a way that you can still coach them and still allow them to be the top players they are to express themselves. And if you don't do that, then you get what they have now, which is they don't look at the game against Arsenal. Almost at that game, you play the first leg. You see, say Arsenal are a tough cookie to crack. So what do? You coach your team so that they can break down that Arsenal defense or exploit holes that they've left. All they did was cross and Inshallah for 75 minutes. That's all. And the crossing serve is no good. And you are crossing to a team that has 6 foot something Kivior and 6 foot something Saliba. How does that work for a player of Mbappe who isn't necessarily that strong in the air? It's not like you had Giroud where you go, that's okay, I get somebody like Giroud. So if you cross him, he go do something. You had Mbappe who likes the ball to feet. So what's the point? So a lot of times, if you go and watch that game again, a lot of times they'll cross the ball. There's actually no one there to even attack the ball. And that's the problem. So it's not just Mbappe. You know, yes, Mbappe is a part of it. He's the known denominator in this whole two team saga, whatever. As he left PSG, you know, since he didn't go catch semi-final. he can't, no. Real Madrid know the few make semi-final. That be what somebody could talk. No be me talk. But At the end of the day, it's not just an Mbappe problem. It's a coaching problem. I think, for instance, if someone like Flick was coaching this Real Madrid team, he will also find a way around it. He also likes to let his good players express themselves. But there's a way that they will play.
The thing is, I don't see how any coach would be able to completely solve this problem. Because it's just a simple matter of, you have a bunch of players who like to play in a certain way. And this one, like you said, is poor squad building. It's a situation where Florentino Perez allowed his ego to get ahead of common sense. Because, like you said, a few years ago, I was saying if Real Madrid add Harry Kane to this team, nobody will feel serious at all. This was when Benzema left. and they were looking for replacements. If they had just signed Harry Kane as a replacement, it would have been a like-for-like replacement. Everything would have been perfect. But again, star power. Florentino Perez was fixated on the idea of Mbappe.
I find it weird because when Mbappe pulled that first hood over their head, he swore that he won't sign him again.
And the Madrid fans were all angry. They were all saying, this guy doesn't respect us. We are never going for him. This is the end. And then for some reason, it's like they are just obsessed with star names. It's like no matter how they try to fight it, they just can't. So for me, like I said, a few years ago, I said, Kane, if they add him, nobody could see them at all. Beginning of this season, I think it was just 2 weeks into the season, I remember tweeting that at some point, Real Madrid would have to choose between Vinicius and Mbappe. And I remember a lot of Real Madrid fans were coming for me, saying that, people, you don't know ball. First 2 games of the season, see what they talk. But certain things, if you see, you see. Like, two players prefer to play on the left. And the thing is, you don't sign a player the caliber of Mbappe and not play him in the position that made you want to sign him in the first place. Like, then why are you signing him? Like, you sign him because you know he's excellent attacking from the left. Then you go and put him in the middle. The thing is, when you put him in the middle, he's going to perform in certain games. Like, that one, it doesn't mean that if you put him in the middle, he could score 10 goals a whole year or something. Yeah, there are going to be games where he's going to get chances and he's going to score. But it's in the big games where you really see whether this has been a good decision or a wrong decision, whether it's a good fit or a wrong fit. Because in the big games, that's when it's now a matter of tactics against tactics. People are going to try and counter whatever you're trying to do. If you don't have that person up front who is going to be staying where you're supposed to stay, hold up the ball, link play, all of those things, that's when you're going to struggle. So, yeah, you can score hat-tricks against Getafe and all of those boys and you use it to happy yourself. But in the end, it's the big games where you're going to get found out. So,
Thought they would go the other way, where they will play Inspector Rajesh rather in the middle and play Mbappe and Vinny will play wide, but they will be swapping throughout the game. This thing they act like we know CC as Mbappe starts, they will not be right wing he they play.
He was playing the right, but the thing
I
is,
I get that now, he's a big star.
Egos have changed. Vinicius, first of all, if Mbappe had come at the time that Real Madrid were first chasing him, it might have been a different situation. But the moment he came after Vinicius's Ballon d'Or season, suddenly you're walking into Vinicius's team. Vinicius is going to feel slighted if you move him somewhere else, had a Ballon d'Or caliber year.
I get it, but this is Real Madrid Football Club. It's not Chelsea. It's not Dortmund or something like that. This is Real Madrid. You play where we tell you to play. Finish. If you think you are bigger than Real Madrid, we'll put you on the market and we'll sell you. Go to another club and go. He said, go back. Right one. It's simple. There's a reason why big clubs are big clubs. And big clubs are big clubs for the sole reason that when you come in there, no matter how big you are never bigger than the club. You play where the manager tells you to play. There is something called playing and switching rings throughout the game to cause trouble. You are not getting joy on the right. We swap you around. You come to the left. The guy on the left goes to the right so that he can also try. As a footballer, is it not fun for you if you are on the pitch and you are helping to find problems that your team can't find? Say you did left, you define joy. Your partner for right, they struggle. You know the beast says you go left and left, go the right there, then go show that right back or left back or whatever there. So how would they do them? You self, you come out looking better than me.
But
left,
here's
back,
the
right,
thing. What if I'm playing on the left? I'm having a very good game. Now you won't make a go play the right.
You are going to play the right so that the team gets better. You're not playing the right because they won't make you play the right, keke. You are playing on the right so that the team gets better. It's always supposed to be the team above you, the good game you they have. If you're having a good game, they do that Rooney in Kiddy in terms of, hey, then score with 5-4, but me, I score 4 goals. So I don't know if it's how everybody, I don't know about you guys. That'll be what we search.
You see, but the thing about the great players is that, like it or not, the thing that makes them great is that they also want to have their personal accolades in addition to the team success. Some of them will come and pretend like, oh yeah, it's all about the team, this fake humility that Messi has been doing his whole career. But in the end, they also want to boost their own CV. Like, they want the team to be great, but they also want to be great as an individual too. So, like, if I'm having a good game on the left and now it shifts me to the right just because my partner, they struggle for there. Now, me too, I go struggle for there, making it start, they claim the shine and everything. Like, that's not how the big players think. So, unfortunately, that's what makes them great, and that's also their flow.
But as I said, I think for Mbappe, he should have started, they should have played him on the right. He can't come and tell anybody that he can't play there, because we all know that that's where you started out. That's where you started out. Play on the right. Play on the right. Like, right now, play Tatis there. You go start, like, last season, Kupama could play for right. He will start as the bona fide right winger. But throughout the game, he actually never plays right wing. He's always drifting in to the right half space or right attacking midfield space. And then the right back, he will either go up and down, give up. He will either do the actual right wing. But he's not actually the right winger. It's Kupama that is the right winger. And he gets a lot of joy out of that. Because if he drifts in, the angle opening up to him. He can cross, he can pass, he can shoot, he can do 1-2, this and that. He can dictate the play and them kind of things. Like, at the end of the day, there are so many things that you can do if you play right or left. And I think Real Madrid just haven't been bold enough. You know, this is not a team full of Cristiano Ronaldo's, Benzema's, and Cruz and things where them win many things where you know if you tell them, my friend, sit down somewhere. All of these players, they are good. They've won a couple of Champions Leagues and things. But they can still be told, shut up, sit down, move to the right, move to the left. And that's what they should have done. I think because you are buying somebody like Mbappe who comes with a massive ego, you must set the team up in a way where it is never Mbappe, or it must be the team, or you go to the bench. Simple.
Anyway, we come to the end of this episode. If you haven't done this already, please follow us on our social media pages: Twitter, Instagram, ATW Podcast GCR, YouTube After the Whistle, TikTok After the Whistle, and again, subscribe to the YouTube. We know you like the Spotify's, the Apple Podcasts, but the YouTube too, we do for you guys. You guys demanded video for a long time. So we are giving you video. Subscribe to the YouTube and leave comments, like the episodes, share the episodes, do whatever you can to help us spread the episode to newer audiences. Again, thank you, Vangelda. I know today we didn't have a full house, hopefully. We'll be able to get more people on our next episode, but we'll try and improve on our consistency as well. So Charlie, once again, thank you guys for listening, and as always, ATW dominates the conversation.